up on the latest edition of Serie A Awesome. We talk Romelu Lukaku's connection with Conte and ask where the Belgian forward ranks among the world's best strikers. Zlatan's set to return for Milan, who are still leading the way. But who are the stars who've also shone the brightest in red and black this season? Two wins for Juve since we last recorded, one not so convincing, the other much more so. We discuss the difference between the two performances. We have this and much more, including Gennaro Gattuso talking modern day management. Serie A Awesome starts now. Welcome into the latest edition of the show. Kay Murray and Matteo Bonetti with you from cold Connecticut. Nikki Bandini is in blustery Brighton. Mina is sunning herself in Dubai, but even that has been upstaged because Mario Balotelli is in Monza, Matteo.
It's not that crazy when you actually start digging deeper and you see who's in charge of Monza. It's the Berlusconi family that obviously had ties to Milan and Balotelli when he was there. It's Adriano Galliani, who was the longtime decision maker at Milan. And they're trying to construct this super team of random players that you think, right, Kevin Prince-Boateng, like 18 months ago, was at Barcelona with Messi. Now he's in Serie B in Monza. Balotelli's leading the line in Monza. You have Paleta, an ex-Milan defender, at the back for Monza. This team isn't even in the top three. I think they're like ninth place. They should be automatically promoted to Serie A, but it's kind of a goofy, fun story to keep out on. It's definitely the most interesting team to follow right now in Serie B.
Has it made you want to follow them, Nikki?
I mean, look, I think for as long as Mario Balotelli plays football, there's going to be a little bit of my heart that wants to watch him, wants him to do well, because he will always be Mario Balotelli, who scored that goal against Germany at Euro 2012. And as an Italian, it's hard to ever move on from a moment like that. But do I think this is a coherent project that is worth keeping an eye on because it's going somewhere? I'd take it with a pinch of salt.
It looks as though Mina's got that misty-eyed romanticism about Balotelli.
It's just whenever she talks, whenever Tiki talks, everything's so romantic. And then you start being like, oh, I love Sassuolo and everyone's amazing and Prandelli's God. But when it comes to Balotelli, didn't Berlusconi once call him a bad apple?
That's true.
I guess he's changed his mind. But I mean, if I'm looking for a striker and I'm Monza, like, if he's going to say yes, then by all means, I'm going to go for Balotelli, because you still think, you remember also what he did for Nice under Lucien Favre. I thought he was stupendous. He really had created something good over there. They had a good connection with the team. So I sort of hope he manages to show that again.
All right, let's get started with some of the teams in the Serie A. Juventus is where we will be starting today, and I'll stick with you, Mina, because we saw them recover from a first half in the Derby della Mole against Torino, but at the time we were thinking, okay, you can still see that things aren't right here, or I think at least most people were. And then they play Barcelona at the Camp Nou in the Champions League. It's completely different, and it looks a lot more convincing. So what was the difference between the two sides?
I wonder if there's an element of psychology going on, because it just seems like, well, one of the questions posed to Andrea Pirlo and the management really has been, they seem to really raise their level when it's a big game or something's riding on the issue. And they seem to drop it when their team opposing them are somebody like Spezia or Crotone, as we've seen in the past, where they've managed to get draws where they should have had wins. So I wonder, sometimes you do think when teams have won so much, 9 years in a row, and I know there's been many changes, but there is a little bit of a, I'm only really now excited to face the big sides. I don't know if you guys remember this, but Neymar had a story at the time, and he's like, I don't want to face Nantes because they were under Claudio Ranieri, so they're going to be super defensive. I don't want to play that game. And it's almost like when you're just very good at what you do and you've done that so well, you don't really want to play teams where everyone expects you to win and you have to put in a lot of effort. You want to play the good sides where you have space, where it is more of a chess game, where it's going to be interesting for you to show off your quality. And I do feel like a lot of those players do that. Having said all of that, I wonder if there was a turning point in the second half of the derby in which it just kind of looked like they all spoke to each other and thought to themselves, we can't be losing to a Marco Giampaolo team. I'm obviously putting my own thoughts into this. But maybe a case of, we can't be losing this. This is so important to us. And then they showed off their best. And I don't know if there is an element of the fact that it is Torino. And I'm going to say this too. It is Barcelona who lost to Cadiz. So as much as, I'm sitting there and I spoke about Real Madrid, I mean, Barcelona even worse. So I was ashamed of the fact that they lost the first round. So I'm 3-0 was about what I needed or what I wanted.
I'm going to go to a more positive side for Juventus because we've been very critical of them on this podcast. And I think rightfully so because of the expectations of Juve coming off 9 consecutive Scudetti, having Ronaldo, needing to win the Champions League with the whole Ronaldo experiment. But I think more so in the Champions League, we finally saw what we've been calling out so many times this season, that Juventus in Serie A is unbalanced. It's not a team that works. It's a team that maybe works on a video game, but not in reality. You look at it and it's awkward. There's players that have no idea where to be. Paulo Dybala was dreadful over the weekend, and rightfully so. He didn't play against Barcelona, and look how much better they were because they had finally 3 central midfielders. And Pirlo, it's like this light bulb went out, and you think that maybe he was included somewhere in his genius thesis from before the season. He was like, okay, Barcelona, they have 2 central midfielders, so I played the third so we could overrun the midfield. It's like, yeah, you can do that in Serie A too. As a matter of fact, your opponents in Serie A are probably looking at your team, the 4-4-2 or whatever you're playing, and saying, we can overload the midfield because they only have 2 central midfielders. So basically, Juventus was doing what they've been receiving all season long from their opposition in Serie A. That's the craziest thing. It's like, look at how much better they are with Weston McKennie in there. And I'm not saying Weston McKennie is the savior. I don't want to give him that responsibility, but you need players with those characteristics. It can't be 4 out-and-out attackers that want to go forward, and suddenly you have no spine in front of your defense, which should be on paper one of the best defenses in Europe.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's definitely worth mentioning Weston McKennie. Pretty good week for him. Clearly he came off the bench against Torino and scored the goal that brought Juventus back level. Having said that, I mean, go and watch that goal if you haven't, because I think any one of 4 Juventus players could have scored that goal, because Torino just didn't bother. Thought, oh, we'll leave them. They can all do what they want to the back post, and we'll let that happen. But I do think Mina's sort of mentioned the psychology of it, which I think is definitely something. I think you look at someone like Ronaldo at this point of his career, there's no question there's certain games he gives you more in than others. And it's kind of valuable to have players who are more attuned to the biggest moments. Having said that, there is also just the blunt reality of how teams set up against you in Serie A. And I think that sort of combining what both of you have said, Torino made no attempt to have the ball against Juventus. When they had the ball, they played fast counter-attacking football very effectively, actually. And yes, having an extra man in midfield for Juventus might have given them some more balance there. But there's a step before that for me, which is Juventus don't really know how to break down packed defences, which they're going to see a lot in Serie A this season, a lot. And at the moment, the solution seems to be maybe Ronaldo will fix it, or if he's not suspended as he was at the weekend, Alvaro Morata will fix it. Whereas against Barcelona, you had room to play. And so it's just a completely different game off the bat, tactically, to what you faced in Serie A and what you're facing a lot in Serie A.
Just to follow up on that point, when you're playing a stacked defense, you think, right, usually teams that play in a low block are forcing everything out wide. It's similar to Sampdoria against Milan this weekend. And you need that central player in the box who can win headers. So you think that, right, Juventus are most likely going to face teams that play them conservatively, that don't want to expose themselves at the back because of all the world-class players that Juve actually have going forward. So you think that with Ronaldo in the middle there and his aerial ability, which I honestly think right now is the best in Europe. I mean, there's no one who can leap like him, who can levitate at the apex of his jump like him. His heading is so precise. You think that Juve would always have an answer just because of how many different looks they can play because of the depth that they have. This team can be a chameleon. They can play in so many different ways. So that is the perplexing bit, that you think, surely with the likes of Dybala and Kulusevski and Ronaldo, these are players that can play one touch, that can get by their defender, that can work in tight spaces. It actually doesn't really make sense that they've struggled so much against defensive sides, because you look at them and you think this team could break down anyone.
Yeah, but I do think that this is a question of, you know, we have to be reminded that it's 10 weeks in, so they can't be yet a side that knows how to morph into different tactical structures. I think the aim of what Andrea Pirlo wants to do is he wants a very vertical side, and you see the best of his team when they do play vertical football. And that means with players such as Weston McKennie, who knows how to win the ball back high up the pitch, who knows how to make interesting runs from midfield and be in the right place at the right time to score these wonderful goals or just provide an assist. Cuadrado is very effective there. There's a lot of balance when you have Alexandro, who I thought was wonderful against Barcelona. I think he offers so much more, and his absence was keenly felt, I felt. And also when you do that, and then you bring in players like, sometimes Arthur gets a lot of criticism that I think is unfair, but he and Dybala perhaps are players that are a little bit more attuned to a lateral game, a dribbling game, tight space game. And even though I thought Arthur was fantastic against Barcelona too, but that's what you're meaning about Chameleon. Hopefully Dybala can be used when teams are very defensive and he can try to weave his way through. But sadly, when they are trying to play this vertical football, it just seems like he messes it all up and makes it so congested through the middle, which is, you know, when you look at the stats, Juventus have been improving game by game. They are getting faster in their movements. They are raising their center of gravity. They are learning Andrea Pirlo's game. And so I do think that effectively, when he manages to at least get plan A off board, then we can start working on plan B, which is how to deal with sides that do defend like a low block. I mean, Liverpool have been going for plan A for so long and only now are starting to find different ways of bringing down teams. So I don't want to go too much into that, but I do think that they have a wide range of options that they can look into. I just need them right now to play that vertical football, because that's when they really do shine. And it has to be, unfortunately, against teams like Barcelona, who want to play football and not defend.
Against Torino, though, you saw Pirlo celebrate, and it was emphatic celebrations from the coach. Nicky, what did that tell us? Was that a game where he thought, okay, we're lucky to come out of that with 3 points?
I think it's heaps of things. Definitely that, because Juventus have dropped points against teams that they shouldn't several times, as we've talked about this season. But I think there's layers. The derby is always the derby. You know, it's always the game against Torino, even if it doesn't feel like it. And even if it doesn't feel like it's been a very close rivalry in a very long time. I was thinking in that moment, of course, it's only a few years ago that Pirlo himself scored, I think, a 94th minute winner in the derby to break Torino hearts. And Juventus have done this a lot to Torino, because he did it. And then the next year, I think Cuadrado did it. And 2 years later, Higuain did it. So they all have this habit of leaving it till the last second. To do that. Definitely just getting out of the game with a win matters, especially with the way the pace is being set at the top of Serie A right now. I think there's some pressure on him to start delivering results. But I think perhaps also there's an acknowledgement in that. And I don't want to move us on to this if people still have things to say about Juventus, but I did want to sort of acknowledge that Torino have played some really good football this season for a team that has 6 points. Andrea Belotti has been clearly in prolific form and is pretty much, you know, making a very serious challenge to Ciro Immobile for that starting spot up front for Italy. But there's other players in that team as well. Wilfried Zsingo, who's this teenager from the Ivory Coast at the right wing back position, I think he's been phenomenal this season. And you see it in the way they break the counter-attacking speed they have. Yeah, frankly, if Simone Zaza has his shooting boots, they very, very easily could have won this game, let alone drawing it, if he had those boots, I suppose. And also if it wasn't for the fact that they keep every single game 19 points now thrown away from winning positions. They keep finding ways to shoot themselves in the foot.
It's hard for me. I feel like there's this inner voice. Anytime I want to praise a Marco Giampaolo team, this inner voice kind of blocks me, and I lose every time. I can't fight it. But Torino, they actually should have done so much better. You think of that Felipe Caicedo goal in the last second of the game. Torino have been the unluckiest team in Serie A, but there is something to say that it's the intangibles, the battling adversity, it's the belief to win. There is a pattern that is emerging here that they're in winning position and they always find a way to shoot themselves in the foot, whether that's disorganization or it comes from the manager or it comes from the mentality, I don't know, but they're definitely a much better side than what the Serie A table is indicating right now.
But can I just, before we move on, because I know you will, can I just say, isn't it just so much better without Pjanic? That's where I leave it.
I was thinking Pjanic was on the other side. It's not just without Pjanic. You had Pjanic against you this week. I was thinking.
No, and he nearly gave us a penalty. You know.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I really miss those 5 yard passes back to the center backs. It's one of the aspects of this Twitter game that I watch those highlights on YouTube all the time.
Inter got a 3-1 win over Bologna with goals from Romelu Lukaku and a brace from Ashraf Hakimi. I actually want to start with Lukaku here because, among other things, he had an interview with France Football and he talked about his connection with Antonio Conte. He also said that he believes he's among the top five strikers in the world. I want to know where he ranks for all of you because it actually divided opinion between Christian Vieri and Antonio Cassano. Christian Vieri says that Lukaku right now is the best in the world. He says he's better than Lewandowski. He's better than Kane. He's better than Luis Suarez. He said Haaland comes second after him and then Lewandowski. Cassano does not agree. He used some very colorful language, which we won't say here on the podcast, to disagree with this. But I wonder what you thought of, first of all, Lukaku's comments, Nikki, and where you rank him.
I think saying that Cassano used some colourful language is almost superfluous. Anytime Cassano speaks, there's going to be something colourful. I definitely have him in my top five. I've just been sort of trying to work out exactly how I have that order. And of course, we get into this slightly ambiguous area of what we consider to be a striker. Is Ronaldo a striker, for instance? I know in the ESPN Top 100, he was in a separate box to the sort of the classic strikers. And I think there's a few players who I want to sort of do the same with. I mean, someone like Kylian Mbappe is not a striker. He's definitely a forward, but he's not a striker. And maybe the same for a Neymar who might come into this conversation. These are players who operate in different forward roles. If we're just talking about what I have in my head, which is like a real number nine, I think Lewandowski is certainly at the top of the list. And then I'm not certain who I'm putting clearly ahead of Lukaku after that. There are other people who are in a bracket very close together. I think Harry Kane is certainly in that. I think that I don't know. I think I almost feel like I have more material to judge Lukaku on because I've seen him in different contexts. I feel like I've seen Kane in a very specific context in which he works. And I wonder if he has the same variety to his game that I've seen from Lukaku. Erling Haaland, I think, is on a trajectory to be maybe even the best player in the whole world. Do I think he does as much for his team today as Lukaku? Again, I'm not sure that I do. I think Lukaku for Inter has matured into a player who is, and first of all, he does score a heap of goals, but he's so much more than just his goals. And I know people like to focus on clumsy touches, which he has sometimes, but his first touch has to be separated from his technique because his technique is phenomenal. And you see him play passes, you see him involve himself in team ways in ways that are really technical. I think he's brilliant. I think he's a team player. He's a goal scorer. I think he's literally carried Inter through parts of this season and last season. So I think he's top three for me, at least.
I put him right behind Robert Lewandowski. And why is it that the weakness of Romelu Lukaku, which is his first touch sometimes, it's not perfect, it's magnified so much. There is no perfect striker. Every striker has maybe one deficiency in the game, whether it's the heading ability, whether it's something else. Romelu Lukaku, and I can already see the Premier League fans, Johnny United, who hasn't watched him since he left Manchester United, saying, how could you? You guys haven't watched him at Inter. By the way, Cristiano Ronaldo, who has played in the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, has said that in Serie A, it's the most difficult league to score goals in. And he's not the only one. Look back at the comments from Carlos Tevez when he joined Juventus. Look at what Patrice Evra has said. Look at what players who have actually played in these top leagues in Europe has said. So that Romelu Lukaku now is playing the most clinical football of his career, scoring a goal and a half, basically, every other game instead of a goal every other game like he was in the Premier League. He is become world class. Take some time, digest it, let it sink in. He has been brilliant. I know it's difficult for people to accept because of the touch that you see against, who knows, Burnley in the Premier League, where he bobbled it one time when a missile came at him. He has been one of the most dynamic number nines. He can run at defenders. He isn't built like any other footballer that right now I can think of, maybe since the days of Adriano. He has been absolutely brilliant. He has a manager in Antonio Conte who believes in him, who desperately wanted him back from his days at Chelsea. He always wanted Lukaku. He thought, I can get this guy to fit brilliantly in my system. I can play with him on the counterattack. I can play the ball off of him. We've seen Lukaku work well with Lautaro, actually be able to combine. We've seen him run past defenders as a 6'2", 210-pound striker. He has been clinical. He has been able to work with his teammates, and he scares defenders. Look back at the video against Jamie Carragher. Jamie Carragher on YouTube was trying to mark him, and Lukaku, when he receives the ball with his back to goal, he's physically stronger than any striker that these defenders will face. He can turn you. He's got that left foot. He can beat his man off the dribble. I love Romelu Lukaku, and I'm putting him in an echelon that I have never put him in my entire career.
That's not
brilliant.
A game that Matteo is talking about. It's actually some footage for Soccer AM in England that is actually worth watching, where it's more of a clinic from Lukaku on how to deal with defenders coming at you, but it's definitely worth watching. Mina, what do you think on this whole situation?
I don't know if you remember, but I hate this kind of topics because they're so subjective. I mean, for me, there's no one ever better than Karim Benzema, but that's only because I look for those skills in a forward. I don't necessarily like forwards who are forwards, like proper number nine strikers, you know? I mean, Icardi is a great goal scorer, but he's not really the kind of striker that I would want on my team, you know? I like ones who work a lot with the side, and I do think Lukaku has been magnificent for Inter. And honestly speaking, he has really grown, really adapted, really enhanced all his skills. He is a lot more technical. He works for everyone. He's worked better on improving himself when he has back to goal. His touches are clumsy, but I feel like it's quite hard to judge him by, because we're talking about, you know, Lewandowski, who's won the Champions League, who's been playing against Barcelona, against Real Madrid. And we're talking about Karim Benzema, who's like, what, the third all-time top scorer? I'm probably making that up, but one of the all-time top scorers in the Champions League. With all due respect, like, Romelu Lukaku was at, you know, United, at Everton and Inter, but he hasn't really played a Champions League final against these moments that, for me, is where I'm going to judge a really top player. And I think that it's hard to do that, because that's where I want to see somebody, and that's where I'm going to judge them. This is why I can't take things seriously when we're talking about Juventus and this Barcelona. Well, you expect that, you know? And again, in the top games last season, against Juventus, against Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League group stage, against Real Madrid now this year, he works really hard for the team, but he's not scoring the goals that I need you to score when I'm looking for my number nine that I'm dependent on. I know you're going to get very angry with me, Matteo. This isn't anything, but it's also not fair to say in many ways, because we're judging him based on 6 group stage matches, and that's also not fair. We need a whole season of him playing in the Champions League with a better team, you know, people that are constantly providing and playing with him, as opposed to being entirely dependent on him to judge. So this is why I find it really hard to say he's necessarily the best or not. I think we have many, you know, when you look at Lewandowski, there's more games to judge him on. Benzema, more big games to judge him on. But in terms of what he's done, Ciro Immobile has done for Lazio, what Lukaku's done for Inter, what Morata's currently doing for Juventus, I don't know if that necessarily makes them all the best players or not. I need to judge them based on whether or not they win semi-finals and Champions League finals, really.
Interestingly, in ESPN FC's top 100 players under strikers, he does come in at number 5, which among the ESPN pundits and all the contributors, that would put him in the top 5. But it's actually interesting speaking about him under Conte, because he actually revealed that Conte told him at the 2014 World Cup that if he became strong with his back to goal, then nobody could stop him. Now, this was before Conte left Juve. He said the same to him when he was at Chelsea. It was his Belgian teammate Eden Hazard who acted as the middleman when it came to getting him there. He gave Lukaku's number to Chelsea's sporting director. The player was told the new Chelsea coach wanted him. That's all he was told. When he arrived at the meeting, he saw that it was Conte there, and he said he should have expected it because it could have only been him. So, Nikki, with what you were saying earlier, do you think Conte is the best coach for Lukaku?
I think it's a great point, and I think it ties in actually to exactly what Mina was saying about who she would want for her team. And I think that's the point with so many footballers. I think it's a point that always gets lost, is every footballer will be better or worse suited to a particular way of playing. And Conte always wanted Lukaku because he believed he would fit into his way of playing. And perhaps even being told that so explicitly over and over again has motivated Lukaku to be even better in this system. He certainly is phenomenal for Inter. And I think it's worth mentioning, because we talk about it a lot rightly with Zlatan and the influence he has as a leader at Milan. I think Lukaku has unquestionably in these 2 years become a figure that other players in the team look to. You can look at situations like giving up penalties to teammates, which in some situations really backfired. But in any case, he's clearly a leader in that changing room, and he's a leader for the team from a morale standpoint as well.
Speaking of leaders, or maybe leaders not being on the pitch, Milan beat Sampdoria and got another W without Zlatan. They are breaking more and more records every week. It is their best start to a season since the mid-50s. It's 8 wins in their opening 10 games, which is their best start since they had 9 wins in the mid-50s. They scored in their last 30 matches. That's an all-time record for Milan in their history. They have won 7 consecutive games away. The list goes on, but it looks like we could see Zlatan back against Parma this weekend, as he has reportedly received positive feedback from a medical test this week. But I don't want to talk about Zlatan this week, because, and Milan, we keep rinsing and repeating, they keep winning, they're staying at the top, they're 5 points clear. Let's rank, or just pick out, the most important players in Zlatan's absence, or just anyway, for Milan this season. Who are you going to go for, Matteo?
I have number one, Gigio Donnarumma. I think Milan pick up so many more points with Donnarumma over the course of the season, where he makes so many vital saves that change the course of the game. Number two, and surprisingly so, Simon Kjaer, Milan's best center back, finally a great partner for Alessio Romagnoli, but in many ways he's played much better than Romagnoli. And I don't think a lot of people would have seen that coming, given the way that Kjaer has been this journeyman defender hopping from team to team throughout his career. And number three, I think, is pretty obvious, but Ismail Benacer. Him and Frank Kessie have formed such a good holding midfield duo. You could honestly pick any one of them as those top three players of importance. But Benacer, he's so tidy in possession. He's actually quite good defensively, and he's the perfect complement to what Frank Kessie does. And a big reason why Milan have been so consistent and have been so good is because of the play of those two linking the defense with the attack and really working so well together.
I find it impossible to name one or two players, because I feel like this whole team's amazing. Like, you know, there'll be moments where I'll be like, wow, Sam Akers is amazing. Like, why did we never spot this kid, you know? And then you'll look and you'll be like, Çalhanoğlu, the way that he's grown and the way that he's developed. And for so many times, I thought to myself, you need to sell this guy. He's not obviously doing it, but he's been magnificent. I think Frank Kessie and Benacer, just like you said, and Donnarumma makes up for the fact that Milan don't know how to defend from set pieces. And so, you know, when you have him, you just have strength at the back, and you can honestly have like two of the worst defenders ahead of him. And I still think he would rescue that side over and over again. He's so fantastic. But as it happens, they have a great defense as well. And it's like Matteo just mentioned, Kjaer. I never know how to say him. His name just doesn't roll off the tongue like it does with Matteo.
Yeah. And, I think I say it wrong as well.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
And he's by the way, and they managed another win without so many important players. And it's almost like, you know, at this point, you can take away the management, you can take away the coach, you can take away their best players, and they'll still win, because each player is not just developing on a technical level or on a tactical level, but in terms of leadership too. They really want this, and they are really playing some of their best football. Even when they're not always at their best, they know how to do it through just a sheer mentality, sheer force. Honestly, my money is all on them to win this title.
I also don't know how to say Kjaer or Kjaer. I'm like, I don't even know if that's right. And I think I change. Simon. I think I change as well. Like, from one day to the next, I'll just switch it up. Sorry to everyone out there who's listening to this and tearing their hair out at our mauling of the name Simon Kjaer. But look, I think if you ask me, like, instinctively, who I think is who's most critical to this team, immediately my mind goes to Kessie and Benacer. I think that partnership is, as the other two have just mentioned, like, it's just so fundamental. Like, it's so core to the identity of this team. I think Frank Kessie is an extraordinary young captain for this team, certainly in a sort of, well, a young leader for this team, at least in the way he carries the midfield. I think there's a couple of names that still haven't been mentioned. And I think it speaks to Mina's point that, frankly, it's impossible to pick out one person because you can keep going on and on and on. But I think Rafael Leão and his ability to dribble, the difference he gives you, and I think that speaks to the variety in this forward line. You've got Ibrahimovic, who can do Ibrahimovic things, but also tactically can be like a totem, can be someone who stands there and occupies space and you can play around. You've got Ante Rebic, who I think the word that Pioli likes to use for him is he gives quantità, which literally means quantity, but it means, you know, hustle. It means being everywhere. But the other player who I think is sort of a great unsung hero of this Milan team this season, Calabria. Calabria has won the most tackles of anyone in all of Serie A. He's a ball winner, all up and down that right-hand side of the pitch. He's not the sort of most eye-catching player in that mix, but he's a really effective and important part of that puzzle. So I think the whole team is the real star. Like, I think that's the point, is it's such a well-functioning machine right now that everyone has a part to play.
That's a great point. It's Mina, teamwork is the biggest thing, because against Sampdoria, they were without Simon, they were without Benacer, they were without Ibrahimovic. And they were going up against a nightmare scenario, a team that plays such negative football, everyone behind the ball, just like what we saw with Sampdoria against Juventus. There's just no attempt to play any sort of football whatsoever, just hoping and praying on the set piece or Quagliarella creates something out of the blue. And no Ibrahimovic, no one to play the ball off of. So you have Rebic, who's out of position, who doesn't really work against a team that's that deep. And this Milan always finds a way. And by the way, players like Sandro Tonali, yet again, quite poor. And they can overcome any sort of lapses in concentration. Feels like Milan always find a way. And I expect them to win every single game, which is crazy to think about, because this is unrecognizable from the team that we saw for the last seven seasons.
Can I ask one question to you guys? Like, because you were saying about Tonali, and it's my sort of, I hope that will work together. I just want to ask your quick response to this, Mina, and then I will leave you the floor. is there another tandem, like two midfielders in all of Serie A that you would rather be starting with than Kessié and Benacer? Because for me, it's a no. Like, for me, that's the best central midfield two in the division.
Agreed.
I do think so. I do think, I'll be honest, I always feel like midfield wins you championships and wins you everything, to be honest. So it was always Luka Modric and Toni Kroos. That was, for me, something amazing. For Juventus, obviously, Andrea Pirlo at the time, Pogba and Vidal. And I thought last year, for me, it was Sensi and Barella alongside Brozovic was fantastic to watch when they were on their game. But you're right, it is Frank Kessié, and obviously Benacer. But I also really want to mention the fact that the very best teams are ones in which you really don't know who to point to. Like when Bayern won the treble, it was like, who do you give it to? Because Frank Ribery is amazing and Robin's amazing. Or Antonio Conte's Juventus in the first seasons, when you just looked at that and you thought to yourself, it is such a team effort. And one of the lines that was written at the time in one of the newspapers, which I forget, was Conte can change players like Elizabeth Taylor changes husbands and everything continues to work as normal. And I thought it was the most fantastic thing, because it was also the substitutions. I mean, speaking of players whose names I still cannot pronounce properly, no matter how much I try, no matter how many Corvo I listen to, Hauge. I hope this is how I say it.
Perfect, actually. Sound
Norwegian. Oh, amazing. And he comes on, Hauge, and he comes on, and I'm just thinking, this kid is terrific. It's every player that comes on does something special. And sometimes they won't be at the top of their game. You know, they were very dependent on Theo Hernandez last season. Now they're a little bit more balanced with, like you said, Calabria, who, by the way, just gives the best interview. So honest, so wonderful to listen to. I really hope he makes it to the Euros. But it's also that. It's the fact that you can take off whoever it is and you can survive without some of your best players, because whoever's sitting on the bench is happy to do their best and can give their best in only a few minutes.
Napoli had another high-scoring win. This time it was against Crotone. But I would like to talk about Gennaro Gattuso, because he's had some lovely quotes once again this week. I think we're going to get them every week from him. Anyway, he says that he would be on the bench in his own squad. He says, if I was in this Napoli squad, I'd spend a lot of time on the beach. And then he went on to talk about modern-day management, saying that players are like children and you have to realise that times change and you have to change with them. So he said if he tried to deal with his kids the way his father did with him, it wouldn't work. work, and he feels that more coaches need to be open to adapting to changing times. He says, for example, he doesn't like music in the locker room. He finds it very annoying, but he understands that that's what the kids do nowadays. And so he says, we used to try and concentrate before a game. But I think it is very interesting to see that he does understand that to be a modern day manager, you have to adapt with the times. And I wonder what you all think about whether or not he gets the credit that he deserves. I'll start with you, Nikki.
I really love this quote because I think he's 100% right. And I think that analogy of parenting is a really effective one, actually. I think I've heard plenty of managers, even when he was at Inter, actually, I think Mourinho was guilty of this. And I think Mourinho has sort of learned that he does have to be different and has sort of adjusted over time. But I remember Mourinho saying at Inter, oh, these kids today, they're too entitled, basically with reference to Balotelli at the time. And I think that it's not incumbent. Well, you can think if you want to, it's incumbent on the kids to do differently and to be like you used to be, but they're not going to change. You're not going to transform society back to the way that it is in your head that it was when you were a kid. So as a manager, you have to be that. You have to learn that things change. I mean, I do wonder a little bit with that thing about the music, whether or not that wasn't just his locker rooms when he was a kid, because I'm sure there were certainly in the 80s, some locker rooms that had music playing. But look, I think Gattuso's doing a phenomenal job. I think we're still a little bit underestimating how good Napoli have been this season, because every time you look at the league table, they are missing points. They're missing points because of the situation against Juventus. So it's easy to look at it and not realize, actually, they've played, other than really that one game against Milan, they've played pretty flipping well all season.
Sassuolo.
Yes, you're right, the Sassuolo game. So I think he's doing a really strong job. I think it's not all the way there as a project. I think this weekend is the sort of game you're going to get when you have that much attacking talent against a team that isn't equipped to counter it. But Napoli are playing well, and Gattuso has shown already in a short managerial career a lot more of the sort of nuance you hear in that statement. A lot more nuanced than I think a lot of people gave him credit for at the start, when everyone's just thinking he's going to be big gruff Gattuso who comes and shouts and frankly is exactly the dinosaur that he's explaining you can't be.
I remember there was a scene back when Gattuso was the Milan player, and do you remember that Milan-Tottenham game when Gattuso and Peter Crouch got into a fight? And it was just bizarre. And Gattuso was interviewed after, and he was saying how Pato went and locked himself in the bathroom. And I always thought Gattuso, maybe, you know, behind the scenes, maybe he is this bully that you see on the pitch. But it really didn't seem like that at all when you start asking questions and you read Andrea Pirlo's book. And he was almost this cartoon character, right, that all the other players kind of, you know, took the mickey out of, as you say in England, and made fun of, and he was just part of the crew, and he was this, you know, kind of larger than life figure that was made fun of and could dish it back. And as a manager, his managerial adventure did not start well, right? He kind of bounced around. He was in Serie B, went to Greece, and then he joined Milan, and it seemed like it was going to be another failed experiment. But really, before Pioli, in the 7 years, I think Gattuso's Milan was maybe the best version of Milan. And he got along with the players. Apparently, a lot of the players loved him. And it was the same thing at Napoli when he took over. He took over after the most difficult period in Napoli's last decade, right? Post-coup, Carlo Ancelotti getting sacked, the players trying to throw a revolt against Aurelio De Laurentiis, and that they needed to go in ritiro after a poor performance in the Champions League. And Gattuso took all that, and he's brought Napoli back to being the anti-Juve that we had seen in the past under Sarri, under even Mazzarri and other people. So Gattuso has done a brilliant job. He's turned this Napoli around, and he's made them look like a team that plays nothing like how he was as a player, right? Because there's still this misconception of like, oh, look at Diego Simeone, his teams play like him, or Antonio Conte, his teams play like him. It isn't the case with Gattuso.
No, and I think that that's a very strong point, because you can also see two different sides to him. Because at Milan, I think that he was constantly thrown in very terrible situations. There was a lot of absences all the time, a lot of injuries that he had to deal with. He learned how to make do with whoever was available. And really the foundations of Frank Kessié, players like that who are thrilling at this stage of the season, a lot of that started with Gattuso. And I remember at the time being like, I don't know why you would change him, because just for the sake of stability, I wanted him to stay on board, because I like when there is a coach who lasts longer than, I don't know, 8-10 months or whatever it is. And I thought that he had laid down some good foundations. And then, of course, now at Napoli, he plays all this fluent football. And what I think is good about it as well is that they do change players a lot. They change formations. They've changed the way that they've, you know, played their players. Just like at this time around, they've got Deme and Bakayoko, Zielinski up top as a trequartista, and they were fantastic to watch. It's Lorenzo Insigne, or it's Osimhen, or it's Mertens, or it's Lozano. Each one is developing. Each one is, you're seeing the best side of Lorenzo Insigne. You've seen Chucky Lozano come back and be a threat nowadays when people thought it was wasted money. It just seems to be a happier place to be when Gattuso is there. Having said that, I mean, he's not somebody who ever holds back in interviews. And that's one other thing that I also love about him. So many times you find like coaches just say what they need to say because that's supposed to be the right thing to do. But he's happy to say, yeah, I yelled at them because they want to play everything so flowery and all that. And I just love that. It just makes you feel that it's, you're sort of talking to your friend about everything. And I think that's what makes it fun. But in terms of music in the dressing room, did you know that Gonzalo Higuain likes Miley Cyrus as the client?
I did. I did. I know this very well because when I was at Real Madrid TV, we had a series of interviews called the Real Series. And I did most of the English-speaking ones, and one of my colleagues did the Spanish-speaking ones. And every player we had to ask, what's your favourite song, so that the music could be played in. And he chose Miley Cyrus's The Climb. And you know what? I'm not going to hold it against him.
No, you know? I love him for it.
How do you think Napoli are doing then, Mina, of late? Do you think we're seeing more of the Napoli that we know and expect?
We are, and I do think they're a very good side. I don't know what it is, but I really do like Crotone. I know that people hate me for saying that because they are, you know, a side that perhaps is very well organized, but they have so much balance. Freddie's getting so upset. Freddie's our producer, in case you don't know, and he hates me talking about side that have organization, because basically he just wants teams to go forward and embrace the Pep ideology, don't you, Freddie? Anyway,
they call him Freddie the Flair.
Freddie the Flair. But I think Crotone are just a really good side. They can't score goals because they don't have a lot of talent, individual talent. But in terms of movements and passages of play, I think they're very good, and they came close to an equalizer. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you're comparing their talent to that of Napoli's, and of course, they're not going to do as well. But there are some matches in which I just think they create a lot, but they're not as efficient as they need to be. And that's a criticism I've had for them for 4 years now. So I worry about them in that sense, that I would want them to be with somebody who perhaps isn't flowery and can just be direct and knows how to just score goals and perhaps not take part in the final third and just be there to knock them all in. That's my only fear of them, because I think that otherwise they play splendid football and they're always a threat, but I don't know if they're always efficient.
Speaking of former players who are now managers and very outspoken in their role, what's been going on with Sinisa Mihajlovic at Bologna, Nikki?
He had quite a press conference before Bologna's game against Inter. The headline was him basically asserting that there's a mole in his squad. He said he changed something up in training tactically, and immediately the papers knew about it. And he basically said, you know, when I get my hands on this person, it's going to be ugly. So he was really sort of forthright and clearly very angry about this this idea that someone inside the camp leaking his secrets to the press. But it was, I mean, we've just talked about Gattuso and how he speaks in press conferences. Mihajlovic is a tour de force all of his own. In the same press conference, he talked about Lukaku and how you stop a player like that. And he basically said, look, I couldn't have stopped him as a player. He paused, went, well, maybe with some illegal punches in the boxing ring, but I don't think I could have got away with that on the football pitch. So Mihajlovic is still Sinisa Mihajlovic.
Yeah, still Mihajlovic. I don't know who's more scary, actually, Mihajlovic or Gattuso. Meanwhile, Lazio are into the knockout stages of the Champions League, Mina, for the first time in 20 years. And we must talk about that.
Yeah, because I mean, Simone Inzaghi was a player when they were last managed to do this. What a feat. But honestly, they nearly threw it all away on the 71st minute. He did a triple substitution, or maybe four players at the time. And he took off, obviously, Ciro Immobile and Luis Alberto. And I just thought, is this going to destabilize the team? Because it was so many big players. But you thought they had this. Club Brugge had gone down to 10 men. And Lazio looked in fine form. And then by the end of it, I'm supposed to be on holiday, but I had heart palpitations till the very end. Because I just thought, what if this ends up being a loss for Lazio after everything they've done? And I think they've been tremendous because they've had to deal with COVID-related issues, many absences. They managed to get the points they needed to qualify and nearly threw it away in the last 15 minutes. But luckily they're through, and hopefully Italy will have all four representatives, hopefully.
Hopefully. So listen, I need to talk about a team that still hasn't won under their new coach, because it leads on to what Matteo would like to talk about. It is Fiorentina. They took on Genoa. I said if this was their chance to get a win, this would be the team they would get it against. Well, they didn't. It's 1-1, so it means that Fiorentina are still winless under Prandelli. He says maybe the wind has changed, though, so he's saying that he's seen some signs that maybe things can turn around for them. Obviously, he's the coach. He's going to say something like that. But it's Genoa, the side that had the 1-1 draw with them, that you would like to talk about, Matteo.
Really quick question to Mina and Nikki. How many times have Genoa changed manager in the last four seasons? Just take a wild guess.
Oh, it feels like 100.
Okay, close.
Four. Eight.
Eight, okay. Mina?
Four. I just four? Also want to mention that Freddy the Flair hates Genoa. He wants them
ready. I have a rant about Genoa. They are the most poorly managed side in Serie A under Enrico Preziosi. I have no idea what this team is. Every manager that they've changed since 2016, 2017, when Gasperini left, ready? Ivan Juric, Andrea Mandorlini, Ivan Juric, Davide Ballardini, Ivan Juric, Cesare Prandelli, Aurelio Andreazzoli, Thiago Motta, Davide Nicola, Rolando Maran. 10 different coaching changes in four seasons. Every single transfer window, it's a completely different side. The team lucks out sometimes, like Krzysztof Piątek, and it's by mistake because they didn't mean to sign a player that would end up going for 10 times more than what they paid for him. Did you guys know that Mattia Destro, Milan Badel, and Marco Piazza are on the team? And I'm asking this more towards the people who listen to this podcast, maybe that they don't watch Genoa every week. Every time I watch Genoa play, they throw on a player. I'm like, he's on Genoa now? This team has no rhyme or reason. This team changes every 6 months. It's a disaster. They're so lucky that they haven't gone down to Serie B yet. It's almost like if you're on the twilight of your career and you're a journeyman and Genoa has not snapped you up, you should be offended.
So will Juve lose to them then?
They might draw. Who knows?
Oh, that's next up. Juve against Genoa. And also you've got Inter coming up against Cagliari. Cagliari is a team that you've just covered as well. Roma played out a 0-0 draw with Sassuolo. There were no goals, but there was plenty of drama. There was a red card. There were two disallowed goals. There were numerous chances. Fonseca blamed it on the officiating, the result, and De Zerbi blamed it on his team. So that's interesting. Obviously, Sassuolo going on the down a little bit, and maybe Mina was right to not jump on that bandwagon so quickly.
Dybala, yeah. Sassuolo. I mean, what am I getting wrong here? I mean, all of it is right.
Anyway, that is all we've got time for this week on Serie A Awesome. It's been great to hear from everybody. We always love to hear from you as well. If you have any questions for us or any comments about the podcast, please tweet us and let us know. That's it from us all, though. Ciao for now.